You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Many of the stories featured on This American Life strike me as touching enough or twisted enough to make good movie material. Now in the middle of its 17th year on the air, host Ira Glass and frequent contributor Mike Birbiglia have decided to test that notion. Together they have adapted Mr. Birbiglia's off-Broadway one-man show about his experience with REM sleep behavior disorder into a film that also looks into his beginnings in the world of stand-up comedy. Sleepwalk With Me opens this coming Friday at the IFC Center, and I'm very pleased that it's brought Ira Glass, the film's producer, and Mike Birbiglia, its writer, director, and star, to our show today. Welcome back.
So nice to be here.
Thanks, Leonard.
Ira, how often do listeners tell you that the stories on This American Life would make great movies?
Often. And truthfully, we for a long time we tried to figure out how do we describe what the radio show is, and if you actually say what the radio show is, which is it's documentaries and it's interviews, it just sounds like it's going to be boring. So for years we've said, the way to think of it is it's like little movies for radio. So mm-hmm. This time we've put it to the test.
And I think public radio has pushed that more than any other medium today. In the old days, radio very much could be visual. But today it's shows like yours or The Moth, a few others, the new shows, all things considered, I think started off making little mini movies in their news reports. But
public radio has become the HBO of radio.
It's become the 1940s radio of radio.
But I guess the question is, how do you tell a story that will stimulate people visually than just telling them what's going on?
I mean, in this case, we had the good fortune that the story is about somebody with a lot of anxiety about what's going on in his life and very relatable anxiety. And he's acting it out in this very physical way through the dreams. And we had an incredible cinematographer, and we could shoot the dreams and make the dreams really funny and lovely. So it naturally lent itself to visuals.
Well, Mike, haven't you written this story three times now, the play, the book, and now the film script?
Do you think
you finally got it right?
Well, actually, this morning, the answer to that is no. Never. But I was saying this morning that I'm working on the graphic novel, and Iris said that
the artisanal cheese plate. That's what
Iris worked on
the artisanal cheese plate. Each character will be represented by a different artisanal cheese.
To answer your question, this is the end of...
That each time you rewrite it, it gets harder. When you first were telling it on stage, you got it down, and then you're just like, now I'm going to do it as a one-man show on stage, and that was really hard.
Yeah.
And then to make
as
the movie...
As a book, it was really hard.
And then the movie became the new hardest thing.
Well, in the movie, you also have to worry about things like how to move the camera and how to edit the whole thing.
Absolutely.
And whether the lighting is okay.
And who's going to pay for it?
Making the artisanal cheese plate, you're going to have to worry about where do we keep the goats? What do they eat?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you add crackers?
Or do you buy the cheap stuff at the supermarket, or do you go to a really fancy cheese shop?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, making movies is oddly what I always wanted to do since I was 19 years old. I was a screenwriting major in school, and so I directed some short films in college and found that I couldn't afford it. I mean, it's like making movies is the opposite of a job. In a job, they pay you to do a thing, and in movies, you pay someone else to do a thing. And then when you're starting out, the thing that you're making is terrible. You know, so like I would make these terrible short films and I would be thousands of dollars in debt. And I just said that this is not a viable business model.
Well, you have to learn on somebody else's dime.
You do. Well, you do. And so in a weird way, I had this 5-year plan when I left college, which is I'm going to become very successful as a comedian. And then,
no way. This was your plan?
Yeah.
Be a successful comedian first
and then circle back.
You are an insane person. And like this is the plan.
That was a 5-year plan. It took 14 years.
Okay, so a year ago. Seriously, yeah.
It sounds like Maoist China. 5-year plan takes 14 years.
There's so many similarities between you and Chairman Mao. Also, like at the beginning of last year, at the beginning of 2011, when we shot the film, Mike was very much like, okay, so here's my plan. I'm not going to tour for the summer, so we can shoot during the summer. We're going to step one, raise $1 million. Step two, hire a crew. Step three, shoot for the summer. Edit in the fall. Get out of shooting in September, edit, make the October deadline for Sundance, get into Sundance, win an award at Sundance, get a distributor, open in New York. in August, that is now.
Take out your checklist, Ira.
And crazily, I know, it's like every part of that is insane, and yet, you know. Like,
and it happened.
It's really sad. It took 14 years to get the five-year plan done, but we got it done.
See, the film is also, like, for me, a teenage dream that I had, just like a teenage dream of you had of making films, a teenage dream that I had of having a friend, and so this is how I achieved it, by conning him
now,
into letting me
now
produce
how did
this film.
Did you know about Mike first as a stand-up comic, or did you hear him tell the story
it's
first?
so sad that just like my life is like I work so many hours and meet so few people that I met him through my job where I heard exactly. I have a very sad life, and I heard the story that he told on stage. There was a recording of him telling the story about jumping through a window during a sleepwalk that the Moth had done. He had performed it on stage for the Moth. And I'd heard it, and I thought, like, this would be great on the radio, and called him up.
Now, do you think having started as a stand-up comedian gave you certain skills as a storyteller?
Absolutely. I mean, it's funny because people think it's so surprising that I directed a film, but in a way, if you look at, you know, Charlie Chaplin or Woody Allen or Albert Brooks or any of these are comedians, they're stage performers, and essentially when you're a stage performer, a solo stage performer, you're doing everything soup to nuts, and you're a control freak. And so
In other words, perfect recipe to be a director.
The director is the ultimate control freak.
But when you did the one-man show, you had somebody else
doing
a
director. Yeah, Seth Barish directed that, and he came on as a co-director in this film. But yeah, I mean, it's... The reason I wanted to direct partly was because everybody, if you have too many chefs, you ultimately water down what your voice is.
Now, the story is largely about...
I'm glad you kept that to a sort of food metaphor, a chef who would water it down.
You're back to that cheese thing.
I am. You know, the nice thing about having a stand-up comedy... It's true. And the nice thing about having a stand-up comedy, about having Mike, you know, be in the film, is that, like, we knew in putting it together and writing the script that he had this way of just talking directly to the audience that it seemed like we could harness in the film as one of the things that you could do.
Although you didn't call yourself Mike in the film, why?
We talked about that a lot. And like the two films that we looked at were Annie Hall and Private Parts, Howard Stern's movie. And in, you know, Woody Allen, of course, calls himself Alvy Singer. Howard Stern calls himself Howard Stern. And Howard Stern, of course, made one great movie. And then Woody Allen made many great movies. And I want to be more a person who makes many great movies.
I see. This is about your diagnosis of having something called REM sleep behavior disorder. Is this a common disorder?
It's not. It's very rare. As a matter of fact, I was talking to Dr. Dement the other day, which is his real name, he makes a cameo in the film. He was he's a good
sleep
actor.
Doctor.
Yeah, he's
sleep
kind of the father of sleep medicine. No, it's a very rare thing. It's when people have a dopamine deficiency, which is a chemical that's released from your brain into your body when you fall asleep that paralyzes your body so you don't act out your dreams. And it's rare, and I almost killed myself doing it.
Well, you had dreams that we might all have, except that they work differently. You saw a jackal hovering in the corner of your bedroom.
Sure.
Another dream, you'd taken second place in a dust-bustering competition.
And
the problem
is
that you acted them out.
Yes.
And ignored it for years?
How
aware were you that this might be dangerous?
I mean, I was reading Dr. Dement's book at that time, and I was like, well, maybe I should see a doctor, and then I thought maybe I'll eat dinner, you know. I was busy. I mean, that's the thing I try to get across in the film, is this idea of, like, I think sometimes the reason that we're all in denial about whatever ailment we might have in our life, whether it's medical or psychological, is that we think we're so busy. We think there's no time to do the things that actually are essential for us to continue existing.
My guests are Mike Birbiglia and Ira Glass. We're talking about Sleepwalk With Me, a film that opens this Friday at the IFC Center. Well, then something happened that you had to start paying real attention to it. Is it true that your manager only books you into hotel rooms on the first floor now?
Absolutely true.
What was sad was
it was very distancing for me because I would be booked at these gigs, and my manager would call and he said, you know, Mike needs to be booked on the first floor, and they would ask why, and he would try to be secretive on my behalf. He'd be like, because that's what Mike Birbiglia wants, you know, and so I'd show up and they'd just hate me, like, who is this guy?
But the reason is that you went through the window of a hotel in Walla Walla, Washington, you've been sleepwalking. And the amazing thing is that you didn't get really hurt.
Well, I ended up with like 33 stitches in my legs and really cut up on my arms, but I didn't break any bones.
Well, but you went through a closed window.
Oh, I know. And then I didn't break any bones. I think partly because it's akin to like those stories, those drunk driving stories where the person who's drunk is kind of walks away fine because they're so limber. Mm-hmm. And I feel like in my sleep, I feel like it was kind of a limber thing.
You were you dreamt that you were part of a military unit and that you were being targeted by an enemy's heat-seeking missile.
That's right, yeah.
And you had to get away from it.
Yeah, and I actually think the heroic thing is that I jumped out of the window so as to detonate outside of the window for the sake of the platoon.
You had to come up with cinematic ways of showing dreams. Now, dream sequences have been filmed in the past, but I don't think that you wanted to do the Hitchcock approach.
We didn't, no. And as a matter of fact, my goal with the dreams was just to make dreams that felt like my dreams and not dreams I'd see in movies. So, and
you didn't use a theremin in the background to say this is a dream.
No. And thank goodness. No, I think one of the things that you and our editor Jeff Richmond came up with very early on in thinking about the dreams was Jeff said we can't know at the beginning of the dream that it's a dream, because he said then it kills the drama of it, and so all the dreams are designed so that you're kind of inside you think the plot is just going on, and then it's a viewer you realize like, oh wait a second, it's a dream.
Haven't you had a film producer on your staff since 2006?
Yes, we
Alyssa
have.
Shipp?
Yeah, Alyssa Shipp. Yeah. And that came out of having so many people in Hollywood interested in making stories, movies out of stories that had been on the radio show, that at some point we had to hire a movie producer to deal with
but
that.
But none of them came to fruition?
There's one that was made by Warner Brothers that Paul Feig, who did Freaks and Geeks and Bridesmaids, directed, called Unaccompanied Minors, though we weren't so super involved in that. In other words, that happened. And it wasn't like we were trying to make it into a film that would feel like the radio show. The thing that was nice with this was that Mike and I could collaborate the way that we collaborate on stories for the radio show and make the thing have a feeling that I feel like is like the very best stories on the radio show, but just funnier.
I think part of it is that we're under the radar. Like, we were financed partly by WBEZ Chicago partly by this company called Bedrocket, which is an upstart media company in New York. This
business.
Guy named Brian Beadle is in the comedy business.
So in other words, no adult supervision.
No adult supervision. He trusted us and just said, go make your movie. And I think, honestly, if we didn't have that, I don't think we would be here. We would be on another show that was not as well listened to.
Oh, you're so kind. this is a problem that many people have when they write something. They sell the novel or the story or whatever.
And then it all goes
down. Then they see this movie that has so little to do with what they wrote.
Like,
in this case, you can still, by controlling it yourself, maintain something that might be close to integrity.
Yeah, we were very fortunate, and also we were very fortunate to get our editor, Jeffrey Richmond, edited the Oscar award-winning The Cove about the dolphins. And
fabulous.
And Sicko.
I mean, he's a very decorated veteran of editing, and in a lot of ways we found the movie in the edit.
Yeah, no, we very much did.
And we were also blessed with Adam Beckman, who's a cinematographer from
did
this
our
American
TV
Life,
show,
the TV series.
Won an Emmy for that.
So we were able to get some key players
who were way more experienced
than we are.
Way above our pay grade.
And we're able to bring a certain expertise that we don't really necessarily have.
Now, much of the film also focuses on your career in stand-up comedy. And as I said, you are Matt, not Mike. Matt works as a bartender and custodian in the beginning of the movie, and he seems afraid to step on stage. Is that autobiographical?
Yeah. I mean, not afraid to step on stage, but...
But there is that thing called flop sweat, isn't there, that so many comedians talk about?
He's just bad.
I'm just not good at it. I mean, I worked as a waiter and a back waiter at a restaurant in D.C. when I was starting out. And then I worked at the door and bringing food to tables, like nachos and quesadillas, at the D.C. Improv, Washington D.C. Improv, for 3 years. And so that was a amalgamation of that and living in New York. And so I never did that in New York. But yeah, that was – and I learned so much from being, it was like comedy college, working at a comedy club. People always ask me, how do you become a comedian? It's like work at a comedy club and just watch everybody. I would see on any given night, you know, like every given week, Margaret Cho and Brian Regan, Jake Johansson, Mitch Hedberg, Dave Attell, you know, like Scott Thompson, just on and on and on, the best comedians. And you just watch them and then you just ask them questions.
And they're supportive of it because comics, a lot of comics appear in this, but comedy is a very competitive field. It comes across here that they're rather supportive of each other. Is that true?
I think the key to getting comedians to be supportive of one another is if they drink enough, then they offer advice.
On the other hand, in your first appearance on Mark Maron's radio show, WTF, it seemed like half of it was dedicated to talking through a grudge that he held against you.
Well, that's a classic WTF move.
Uh-huh.
Also, the idea, I like that Leonard's phrasing of it is dedicated. Like it was in advance. We had planned it out.
Exactly.
No, Mark just came at me in the first half. But then there's this redemptive thing where at the end, we really like each other. And then he had me host his 200th episode of his show.
Yeah, Ira.
And I cast him in this movie. So I'm just sort of... You know,
it's a love fest. It's a crazy comedian love fest.
Yeah.
You have become known for telling personal stories that often come from experiences in your day to day. Did you ever feel like there was a story that you perhaps shouldn't have told?
Yes, of course. Yes. No, there are plenty.
Because
what are
they're personal?
I mean, in fact, you know, we just did this tribute to our friend David Rakoff.
Mm-hmm.
In
last
week's show, and David just died a week and a half ago. And one of the things that I found as the person writing the show was I know so much about him, and it was unclear what to put into the show, the incredibly personal things I knew. And it's funny, I did drafts of the script which had way more personal stuff and read it for you know, producers on my staff and our senior producer, and they're just like, this just feels weird. And so, yeah, it was a weird situation.
Well, this is the problem with memoir, and to a large degree, what your show is based is a kind of an oral memoir show. Memoir, you always have to decide just how much you really want to tell. And there are some memoirists who feel that you have to tell everything, all the warts and all stuff. I don't know whether you ever did that in your comedy routine as well.
Well, that was partly the reason we changed the names. Like, I felt like it was important from Mike Birbiglia to Matt and my parents. It's not Vince Birbiglia and Mary Jean Birbiglia. It's Frank and Linda Pandemiglio. And I feel like that...
Because those aren't your real parents in the film. Like, it's not... It's like it's way funnier and broader and, you know...
They do come across as a bit kooky in the film.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, your dad's a doctor and your mom's perfectly lovely. And,
yeah.
It's very different.
So when you did the bad comedy, was that based on bad stuff that you actually did, or were you
one
just...
One of the jokes in the film is from my act. It's like one of my first jokes. It's like I feel like we... you know, we have the wrong, like, role models growing up, like Cookie Monster. You think this guy's got an eating disorder? All he eats is cookies, and he doesn't even have a throat. He's only fooling himself, and that's in the movie.
What I love is that now when that plays, like, I didn't think that was going to get laughs, but then audiences just see the terribleness of that, and it gets laughs.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of contemporary comedy is about... the process of making comedy, and I think that may go back to Lenny Bruce and his the guy who insists on being at the Palladium routine. But we're seeing that more and more. You have any idea why that is? Is it because comics think so much about the process of what they do?
When you mean, what are other examples right now? Like,
well,
Louis
Show. Albert Brooks used to do a thing where he was this incompetent ventriloquist. And it was really like a comment on how comics try to get laughs.
Yeah, I think it's what I think with comics, it's what we know.
They have Curb Your
Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
It's what we're closest to. And, you know, in this case, the thing that we have that's unique and that we're bringing to the table is that we don't know of a movie that's ever been about a road comedian, like a working comic kind of driving his mom's station wagon.
And being bad and getting good.
Yeah.
Like the process of being bad and getting
good. One of my models for the bad to good actually was the movie Once, which I thought did a really good job of showing at the beginning the character is doing covers, and at the end, the character's doing originals. And that's how I thought of the comedy in this, is like, he's doing observational comedy at the beginning, and then at the end, he's doing comedy about himself. Mm-hmm. So it's not as much bad to good as it is just kind of like developing an aesthetic from something that's
voice.
Generic.
Yeah.
And there are comics who only do observational comedy.
Absolutely.
Have you noticed that? Blah, 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 blah.
Absolutely.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. I used to be that.
Uh-huh. So what happened? Did you just
stopped noticing things.
And started thinking about himself. He just
totally
turned
a different
inward.
Voice.
And I stopped asking questions of the audience.
Where are you from? You use a different voice in your stand-up than in normal conversation.
You think so?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Your stand-up persona seems to be a little bit slower and lazier than... You don't see that, Ira?
I know Mike too well.
It's
I feel like I'm not one to judge. To me, you seem like yourself on stage. You talk more slowly just so the audience can hear your
words.
It's true.
I'm more deliberate on stage.
There you
so
go.
In other words,
that's the voice right there.
Yeah.
Really?
Just keep going.
You're so unaware of this?
Yeah. So like I'm more deliberate on stage because if I'm making a point, it's important that I'm like, and you know, and the reason why I jumped out the window was that I was just in denial about, you know.
Oh, my God, it sounds just like you, but on stage. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and in
it's
life.
Like you became
In life, I'm truthfully a little bit more manic, I think.
Now, when we do the Q&As at the IFC Center, which one are you going to be? Are you going to be the movie mic? Are you going to be the stand-up mic? I mean, because we're doing Q&As at every show.
It's like a peep show, Ira. I'm whatever they want me to be. We're doing, did you know this? We're doing Q&A's 7 Friday, 7 Saturday.
It was explained
Center.
To us that opening weekend is everything, so we've got to do everything we can to get people there. So we're serving popcorn, we're tearing tickets for those first 2 days.
We're going to be so tired.
We will be at the audience's mercy. They're adding extra shows, Birbiglia, too. I just got an email. It's more Q&A's and less ticket taking. So that's good for us.
And I'm assuming that if this thing is a success, there'll be more This American Life movies?
I mean, we have a few movies.
I mean,
that
now
you
figured out how to make a movie on about $12.38.
Yeah, that's true. I think there will be, you know, we have some other movies that are in the works that are actually pretty close to going ahead and shooting. But none that I've been involved in this way where I was involved in writing the script for 2 years and went to the set and went to the editing room. Like the other ones are being done by trained professionals who don't need me in any way.
I didn't either. He just kept showing up.
Insisting.
I mean, you said that I could be there. You said that I could hang around.
Yeah, for the food. You were coming over for dinner and then you stayed all night and we wrote a whole screenplay.
Well, what else?
Mike Birbiglia of Ira Glass. We've been talking about Sleepwalk With Me, which stars is written and directed by Mike and produced by Ira Glass, who also participated in writing the script, you say?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay. And it opens this Friday at the IFC Center. You can also, you'll have your opportunity to talk to them. Because there's going to be a Q&A.
At every screening.
If people have the best...
Don't ask any of the questions I ask. They're already bored.
For the best questions, apparently, Ira is giving them M&Ms.
No. That isn't how it's going to go. Like we need to sell afternoon shows. So if you come to the afternoon show on Saturday or Friday, Mike and I are going to choose 5 people. We will buy your snacks for you at random. And then on Saturday in the afternoon at 2 o'clock, we're giving away a pizza pillow to the very best question.
Yes. A pizza pillow, which
we
is
referenced
in the film.
We are selling, Leonard.
Mm, that's incredible. Well, this is
from Roberto's, the pizza pillow.
Yes.
Well, you know that that a major part of every movie's budget is the promotion, and I think that pizza pillow is probably a good approach.
That's huge. That's
a high,
hundreds of
high
thousands of dollars
line item in the budget.
Thank you both so much for being on our show.
This is so fun. Thanks.